March 1st, 2016. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hasenplug.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, it's all about Netflix for me. I just sat down and watched Netflix this week.
Lots of Netflix for you.
Yeah.
Netflix is very good.
They came out with a lot of exclusives, and they had my $9.99 this week, that's for sure.
Well, that's part of their plan. The plan is to eventually have one new show every single week.
That's a great plan. I am behind this plan 100%. I'd like to vote for you for president. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And guess what? I watched a lot of silly sitcoms this week. The new Fuller House was released on Friday, and it is the Next Generation. I keep calling it Next Generation because I want it to be Star Trek so badly. It is the next generation of that silly sitcom Full House from the 1990s, 29 years after the premiere of that first one. We see the children of that original show, now all grown up, about to hit 40, and they have kids of their own, and guess what? They are in the same silly situation from that sitcom from the 90s.
This premiered on Netflix. This is part of that once a week premiere.
Yep.
And we're not quite there for the entire network, but this was one of the ones. This is an interesting demographic to hit because I think NBC or NBC Universal was calling Netflix out for not releasing ratings. And Netflix, I think, responded something like, well, we are not going to release those ratings. But the thing is, we're hitting demographics. We're not interested in hitting every market with our shows. This is an interesting pick because it was so long ago where it was released. Did you watch this as a child?
Oh, yeah, very much so. This was, you know, I'm in my middle age, and my little sister is 5 years younger than me. This was certainly one of her shows that she liked to watch. So, yeah, it was on in the house because at the time, there were only four channels. There was only one TV, so you could only watch certain things at that point in history. And, yes, I've seen probably every episode of Full House. And yes, I will watch all 13 episodes of Fuller House. I've gotten through the first four. I'm trying not to binge watch them because it really doesn't lend itself to that. It's a silly sitcom. It's the same formula every 30 minutes. If I'm going to sit and watch 2 hours of it, my brain is going to bleed.
Well, my daughter, with my wife, sat down and watched this too. About a year, maybe a year and a half ago, they started watching the old Full House. So one of the networks must be re-showing the original series. And I was blown away that this would appeal to my daughter. But there's something sweet and saccharine about it.
And just the same as when we watched the reruns of the Brady Bunch back in the day. And Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley and Perfect Strangers, that's all the same production company, this Miller Boyette Productions. And it's just wholesome entertainment.
Well, they like it, and they've started watching Fuller House.
I did too. And I will continue to watch it. The other thing I watched on Netflix was the new Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Sword of Destiny. This is the sequel to the original from 2000. And it's 16 years later, and here we are. And it's, I was a little frustrated. It suffers from a little bit of sequelitis. It is very much trying to be something that it's not, but the fight scenes in this are just as good as the original.
Well, this was on my plan to watch, and for some reason my time got cut short this week. I'm glad you got to watch it. You said the fight scenes were pretty amazing.
Amazing. The ability for those actors to move their bodies in that way is always fascinating to me. I like martial arts movies for those moments.
Okay.
What I don't like about this one, like I don't like about a lot of martial arts movies, is the storyline is very thin. The characters are very thin. They kill off, I'm not going to give too many spoilers, but they kill off some of the protagonists in this movie.
Okay.
And then they go on to explain how sad they are that these people died, but we only met these people 15 minutes before in the movie.
Well, you don't have a heart, Steve. Well, Come on.
When they're killing a mountain of ninjas and these four people, I'm just as sad about the mountain of ninjas that are dead over there as I am about the four people. And they go on to explain how they are sad about these four people dying. But as an audience, we didn't get to know those characters before it happened. storyline is not there. If it was still in its original Chinese, I would be okay with that. I would just like to watch the action.
Okay.
You saw Ricky and the Flash.
Ricky and the Flash.
Tell me about that one.
Well, it had Meryl Streep in it.
There you go. Gold Star.
Gold Star right there. This is an interesting story. This is certainly not for every demographic. My children wouldn't enjoy watching this. I think it's rated R anyway. But it does have Rick Springfield in it.
There you go.
And Meryl Streep and Rick Springfield are part of a band in L.A. And we eventually learned that she had left her family wherever they were in the Midwest. In fact, they were in Indianapolis, to pursue her dream. So she had three children. She's got to go back because something happened to the daughter, and they're going to mend the family back together. They find out there's a wedding, so eventually there is going to be a bow tie at the end. So this is a happy story. But we learn a little bit about the family, and we learn a little bit about how bitter they were that mom went out to do something that she valued and the hurt that she caused the ex-husband, the three children. But like I said, at the end, there's always forgiveness. And I enjoyed that part of the story. And for those people who enjoy Rick Springfield and Meryl Streep, I think you will find that perfectly satisfying.
Everybody enjoys Meryl Streep. You watched The Good Dinosaur, too. I saw this one in the theaters a few months ago, but you finally got a chance to see this one.
We watched it on Apple TV. My daughter wasn't feeling well, and I saw it was available, and I pressed play. This is the most visually stunning movie probably ever.
This is the latest Pixar movie, so it's got all that technology of the Pixar computer.
What a beautiful, beautiful use of animation. The water, the mountains, the trees, I mean, just absolutely gorgeous. And then they have the characters there. This is not the strongest of Pixar films. I think that's pretty fair to say. I think that was one of the criticisms you had.
Yeah, I look for a really strong story and really strong characters, and I did not see that in this one. I think this is a good children's film, and not necessarily the best family film.
Well, that's a good point. This is very much a Lion King, but a lighter version of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what they did real well is they got the visuals right, they've got some characters right, but you could definitely see the storyboard part of it, like, and they're going to meet this group, and they're going to meet this group, and they're going to meet this group, and we're going to just point the arrows to keep you going. This is a mediocre Pixar film, but mediocre Pixar films are still better than most films.
That's true.
I think most children are going to really enjoy this.
Yeah. Again, this is a children's film. This is made for children, and children will enjoy it. It's a great story for their developing minds. Looking at the storytelling is just fine. For me as an adult, I found that I've seen this before, and I was not enthralled by it, like I am with most of the Pixar movies.
My 11-year-old looked at me and said, oh, why are we going to watch this? And then she turned on and started watching it. Mm-hmm. I think she enjoyed it. Spike, the boy, is a good person. And also the story of family is very important in this. And, you know, basically working through fear and family. One of the really interesting stories they tell in this is they put a little circle around a family at some point to show that this is part of a family. The ending, after all the credits roll, and they say, this is, you know, we'd like to recognize all of our families. They put a big circle.
There you go.
So a little bow at the end of that one, too.
That is adorable. Then you watched Beasts of No Nation. This is a very dark and...
much heavier film.
Much heavier.
This is the story. This film right here was released last year on Netflix and at a limited run in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I was listening to some kind of podcast or something where they mentioned this film and how good it was. The person who was doing that had not seen it. At the end, he comes back and says, yes, I saw it, and it was really, really good. So I, instead of watching Crouching Tiger, I watched this. This is over 2 hours. This takes place in an unnamed African country. You can think of this story being in Africa. You can think of it being South America, Central America, some Asian country, some Middle East country, someplace that there's upheaval. Basically, his family goes through, they're trying to escape this ultimate civil war or something going on in the town. The violence comes to them. They're running away. He gets separated from his family.
And this is a young boy.
He's a very young boy. Okay. He's probably 7 or 8 years old. This person was an innocent family person who was in a very secure world. And then immediately is thrown in to a situation where they certainly are not ready for. He's hungry. He's wandering around through the forest. He runs into an army of kids with machine guns, and they're fighting off this one group of people. What are you going to do as a kid? You join. So what does he learn from this? Well, there's drug use. That's going to be part of this. He's got to work his way up through the ranks. Eventually, he has to kill someone. There is child molestation through it. This is all the horrors you could ever imagine a child going through, mm-hmm. to only wind up at the end, trying to escape it. And once you do escape it, you've been through all the horrors of wars. Many people returning from military service after they've had gone through combat situation go through post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, they're adults, so they had a time before that that maybe they can try to reach back and relate to be able to move forward. I don't know how you ultimately work out. If you're a child, you don't necessarily remember your earliest part of life. How do you reach back? How do you normalize yourself from that? And ultimately, the story kind of ends at some point, and this child is going to do that. He's going to have to go forward through that, and how difficult that can be. This is a very good film. This is a deep-thinking film. There's horror in this film that is a real horror, not a fake horror that you go through a horror movie. I highly recommend this film. I certainly don't want people to have to live through this, but to experience it through a movie is a good place to try to grasp the horror that a human can go through.
And there's so many of these stories on our planet right now, and knowing that there are people going through this is certainly something that is important to dealing with people. We have to understand that people have stories, that they are coming from somewhere.
And you realize what the challenge of nation building is through this, because they're going through all this problem. There's a guy that eventually gets killed. He's a guy who builds bridges. He's an engineer. Well, he's part of the fodder of this event. Once again, deep film, something to consider watching without the kids.
Right. Slightly less deep, but still a very poignant movie coming out this week is Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. This is based on the memoir The Taliban Shuffle by Chicago Tribune reporter Kim Barker, and it's starring Tina Fey.
This is her dramatic role?
Yeah, I think it's going to be more dramatic than we are expecting, because the commercials certainly make it look like a comedy.
Well, she's a very likable person. Mm-hmm. This is a great person to play this part. Maybe a dramedy type thing?
It's certainly going to be a funny look at things that are then, I think, going to change the perspective of the audience.
And be very serious.
I think so.
I think so, too. This is interesting. I look forward to watching this. Yeah. Like many movies, I probably will not go to the theater to see this. This is definitely going to be something that's, as soon as it comes streaming, I'll end up watching it.
The other one is Zootopia. This is another family movie, right? Just in time for spring break and Easter, we've got a fun Disney animal-based allegory about life. And these are animals that are wearing clothes and going to work and being in a society like ours.
Well, the sloth trailer was one of my favorites. I look forward to seeing this. My daughter wants to see this, which obviously means somebody's got to take her.
That's right.
And you're right. This is definitely made for spring break, Easter, that type of time. And it was not one of the films that I was looking forward to until they started the advertising campaign, and you saw that, man, they're going to do something fun with this.
The Disney marketing machine. I agree with you completely. I heard about this title a year or two ago, and I went, well, that's no good. And then they started rolling out those trailers and incrementally showing me how much excitement I should have about it. And now, yeah, I agree with you. I am excited to go see this movie.
Thank goodness we have children, right?
That's right. Otherwise, we would watch a lot of cartoons and be, oh, wait. I do watch a lot of cartoons. The other one that's coming out this week is House of Cards. Season 4 is coming out on Netflix. You've watched seasons 1 through 3. Tell me about House of Cards.
Well, all right. House of Cards season 1 and season 2 are absolutely excellent. Season 3 was not as strong. Season 4, we got some changes coming, and we'll see what President Underwood can bring to the table here.
So this is a political...
This takes place in D.C., okay. And Kevin Spacey is going to be our star. He is our president now, And
he wasn't the president in the first three seasons. He was a senator or something?
He was representative.
A representative.
From South Carolina, from Gaffney, South Carolina.
Okay.
From Gaffney. Anyway, this should be very good. I look forward to this being released. I'm so glad it's all released all at once.
And that's one thing that we have not really talked about is 11/22/63 on Hulu is being released weekly, and we want to get to the rest of that story.
I do. I'm finding it, I have enjoyed this, mm-hmm. watching it, but the ability, the reason you have to wait a week, I'm not really enjoying. I like watching one and then moving to the next one. If I have time coming back in the evening, maybe watching another. Eventually working my way through, whether it's a week or 2 weeks or a single day. You never know.
Watching what you want, when you want, on whatever device you want. That's what the cord killers would tell us. House of Cards is very popular. I wonder if there's going to be any discussion about which one's going to get more viewership, House of Cards or Fuller House. Again, Netflix does not release those numbers.
I don't think that they're totally different demographics.
I know.
And I don't think that they will. I don't think that they're going to overlap. I certainly am not going to watch Fuller House. My children, I may catch part of it because my children are watching it. But House of Cards, they're certainly not going to watch. And then, you know, we've got 2 weeks from now. On the 18th, I think Daredevil is released.
Ooh.
So, you know, once again, we hit those demographics pretty hard, right?
Yeah, they have mine $9.99 this month, I'll tell you that much. Brings us to our appetite, our app of the week, and you found a new way to buy movie tickets. This is called Atom. You can go to atomtickets.com and find out this new system where we can buy tickets to go to the movies.
This is like the oddest app ever. Because Disney and Lionsgate have put in $50 million to get this thing running.
Hmm.
And you and I were looking at this site. And we got this off of an article that was written concerning it. And this is about getting your friends together to go watch a movie. There's an app put together for that.
We all know that there's a social aspect to going to the movie theater and watching movies. Going to the movie theater by yourself is not normal. That's weird, mm-hmm. to go to the movies by yourself. So it's a social event. So this is aimed to try to make it easier.
But it seems like, wouldn't you do that through either a chat app or something, mm-hmm. of that nature? Just hey, guys, let's all go to the movies together.
Seems simple enough. This one adds the aspect of you can pre-order your snacks for the movie.
All right.
I don't know why this exists.
There must be a reason, because we do have, I mean, that $50 million is a lot of money to put into an app.
That's right.
The idea of stop paying your friends back for popcorn is one of the sentences that's used for. I guess that's an issue.
I guess there are some people who don't want to pay their friends back for popcorn.
I don't know. But we'll see how this kind of plays out. I ultimately think this is going to be absorbed into some other type of app. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's absorbed into Siri or if it's absorbed into Facebook or Instagram or something. I don't know. But it just seems like it's an app that doesn't really, but no one really asked for.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know if it's really going to have its market unless it can get dumped into something else.
A solution looking for a problem is my favorite phrase coming up with this, because I don't think that this is a problem. If I say to a group of people, let's go to a certain movie, it's relatively easy to get that done. If we get there and we order popcorn, that's relatively easy. I don't see the problem that this solves, but Disney and Lionsgate certainly does. So we'll have to watch this one really carefully.
Oh, sure.
Brings us to our book of the week, and you brought out a really interesting book. This is called Maximum Fantastic Four, and it's put together by Walter Mosley, but he didn't really create it.
Well, Walter Mosley did kind of create it. I mean, in a sense that he had a desire to, uh-huh. put it together. He is a writer, a novelist, and he's written a number of books. In fact, if you go to our notes, you can see all the books that he's written. But he put this together because, as a writer, one day he said, oh, I really enjoyed reading The Fantastic Four back when it, roughly when it came out, and so I'm going to go buy all those old comics. So he bought issues 1 through 16, which, if you know, they're quite expensive to get. So, mm-hmm. he must be a pretty successful writer at some point. He sat down and read them all and said, well, this doesn't remind me of when I was a kid and how I was exciting about them. So he took issue number one, fed it into his computer and read each panel off his computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I got that wrong, I'm sorry. But let me also point out a couple things. We're sitting, this is like a great big table side book.
Mm-hmm.
Came out in 2005. It's got these great big panel pictures, like one panel to a page.
That's right.
It has fold outs in it. I mean, all sorts of interesting. In fact, you take the cover and you fold it out, and your wall would be the original comic cover as far as how big that poster would be from mm-hmm. this. There's two essays in it. One is by Mosley talking about the Marvel Age or the coming of it, and he was a child during that time, how much he enjoyed it. And there's also one by Mark Evanier, who worked as an assistant to Jack Kirby at one time when he moved to California. One day we'll actually have to have a show that we talk about Jack Kirby and how visually he changed the communications of comics, where it went from this very smooth type of creation as far as showing things to you to this, like, everything exploded and super exciting. This is a beautiful, beautiful book. This is the entire first issue, and it comes out to be, I don't know, like 100 pages?
It's so interesting to take a concept and to resize it and leave all sorts of white space in between these images to make art from what was artful, but to change it in such a way to make it different.
Oh, this is just beautiful. It's a beautiful book. And I got it. I sat down and I read it. When he described, he goes, I didn't get, going back and rebuying these comics and reading them, I'm an adult. I'm a big person. And I'm looking at these itty bitty panels. It's not doing it for me. It doesn't remind me of when I was a kid looking at them. And he goes, I was an itty-bitty guy, and I guess the magazine was really big at the time.
My vision has changed. That you go visit your middle school. Everything will have shrunk. No, you have grown. And so he took and grew these panels.
All right, so I ordered this through Amazon, and I ordered a used copy. I'll tell you the fun part about it. One, I didn't pay cover price for it. I paid significantly less. But my copy that came in the mail, which was they said was a library copy, actually is a signed copy by Walter Mosley.
Wow.
So not only, and he signed it back in 2005.
Wow.
So how about that for a lot of fun?
Well done.
There's an innocence to this from back in the 60s. We looked at things different, the world a little bit differently then.
Mm-hmm.
And so as time changed, this we would not produce something like this. If you have an idea of, if you said, well, you know what, I would like to see what this looks like, but, you know, I'm not going to buy a book and have to deal with it, go to Comixology.
Yep.
Order, just buy the first Fantastic Four. It's $2. It's mm-hmm. $1.99. And you can see it. Look at it on your iPad, look at it on your computer, and you can see these panels. Not the way he's put them together.
But a large format to get that nostalgia factor.
Oh, I think it's a beautiful way of reading them. Very interesting. I highly recommend it. Any person who likes graphics and would have interest in this.
And we've talked about Comixology before, how that is a really great way to read comics in general. And that's part of the reason why, is because you are seeing it from a different perspective. Size dictates mm-hmm. how important something is sometimes.
Sure,
that's
sure.
why we're enormous men. Brings us to our Now the News. There's lots of stuff happening in the world this week. And boy, some of them are scary and some of them are fun. Let's get into the news.
Let's go right to Apple, man.
Let's go right back to the Apple. That FBI case with Apple is...
Do you know about it?
That's all that I've been hearing about, because I read a lot of tech news. I don't read a lot of politics news or the other news. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of tech news, and this is a big case.
This is a big case. And Apple responded to this. I think that if you have interest in reading about it, and I think that you should, because I do eventually think this is going to have to work its way up to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, this has ramifications way beyond any small piece of society. This is a giant question about whether or not a company should have backdoors to encryption, whether we as a society want to be able to encrypt things legally. And that's a legal question.
Well, and in fact, the Apple lawyers have responded to it. And they say what the government initially claimed, that the All Writ Act would that justifies this, they're saying no, it doesn't. And so at this point, we're going to move forward where there's going to be a real case concerning this. We have a few things that ended up happening from this. We found out the FBI was not just interested in this one Apple phone, as they initially announced, that there are at least 12 other phones that they're interested in Apple working to unlock for them.
That they have asked Apple to do this in the past, and Apple has said no to all of those others.
Well, that's not true. In the past, they did break phones for them, but this was before they came out with the new phones where they took that ability away.
Right. So these 12 and this one that is the main part of this case are in the FBI's hands, and they want Apple to open them, and Apple has said no.
And we also should mention, it sounds like, you know, Steve and I are pretty much in agreement that once you open the encryption, you know, it's either closed or it's open, and there's no in between here. But we're probably about half of the United States. There is the other half of the United States who are like Bill Gates, who Bill Gates said, hey, listen, if the FBI said that they need this, Apple should go ahead and open it up for them.
For national security, because we need this information to keep us safe.
And so Gates is not alone, and the American public, about half the American public says they should open them. Now, this is really important because Microsoft, Google, and most tech companies are saying, no, we're on Apple's side of this. But Bill Gates, as Citizen Gates, he's basically saying, no. You should be opening this. All right, and
it's not an easy question. There are no easy answers to this question. Each side is very strong, and that's why this needs to go to the Supreme Court and go to the legislation to make a law that says that this can or can't be done.
Well, Tim Cook, in an ABC interview, was very calm when answering questions concerning this. And he said, you know, we're horrified. And he goes, Apple, as a company, we're horrified of what happened. But this is an issue that's beyond just this one phone. And I think that was one of Apple's first original statements was, you know, if there was a law that said this, then we would have to deal with that. But just to have someone request, even if it's the FBI, and even though, you know, we'd like to assist them, we cannot break these phones just for this, I guess, this one. For even though it's heinous, this is not the appropriate use of this technology. Apple's already said they're going to make it more difficult to hack this data. So there's going to be updates eventually that will make it even more encrypted if you can do that.
Apple has said that phones contain our most confidential and personal information, and leaving that vulnerable to hackers is the worst possible scenario. Apple is very concerned with this, and they want our personal and confidential information to stay personal and confidential.
And most companies are too. They want to use that information, but they're not interested in having it available to everyone.
Hopefully you're enjoying your Amazon Prime account with free shipping. If you're not, you're going to enjoy it even more in a minute when I tell you that Amazon boosts their free shipping minimum to $49 this week.
Now, that used to be $25. So if you were not an Amazon Prime member and you ordered $25 worth of goods, they would send them to your mail at no additional cost. The price of shipping has gone up. Interesting enough, the price of shipping may have gone up, but the price of fuel has gone down recently.
Isn't that interesting?
Interesting timing of this. Anyway, but if you are a Prime member, which would support our show,
that's right, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com, and sign up.
There is no minimum order to be able to pay for shipping.
Right.
You're basically paying the one-time fee for that. Anyway, it doesn't cost any more to do that, but it does help our show. But it is interesting as a business model that they have increased their the price to $49.
Yeah, that's definitely a part of doing business is how are we going to get these goods from one place to the other? Mm-hmm. And Amazon Prime is a no-brainer in my house. I order so many things from Amazon.
We do it quite a bit, too. We do it quite a bit.
Because I like supporting the show. Batman versus Superman is going to get an R-rated director's cut, Chip.
No, that's the DVD. Okay. So if you after the we watched the film in March, at the end of March, eventually it'll come out in Blu-ray and DVD and stuff like that. There'll be an R-rated version. And I'm shaking my head, like, at what point did Superman and Batman become adult movies? But I guess Deadpool had something.
This is the Deadpool effect. This is the thing that everybody was worried about.
Well, I'm going to say that they already had filmed this to be an R-rated film, but because of Deadpool's success,
they're going
to
release that.
They have no problem releasing that. I still question. I mean, would Star Wars want to come out as an R-rated film?
Nope.
You know, that just seems to be. Indiana Jones, it just seems to work against who these characters demographically are going for.
I agree.
But I guess there's a group of people that enjoy that, and I'll end up watching it anyway.
The next Wolverine is going to be an R-rated film, according to some sources, so we'll see which of these characters become the R-rated Deadpool and which ones become the G-rated, what's the nicest superhero you got?
Wolverine is controlled by Fox. Fox mm-hmm. also controls Deadpool. It seems to me, and Wolverine's backstory was he was a very violent killer, but the story always in comics is, by the time we got to him, he is tamed. He's mm-hmm. the beast has been tamed.
Right.
I question it. You wouldn't have an R-rated Spider-Man film. Nope. Why do we have an R-rated Superman film? Anyway, we'll see.
I'm still trepidatious about this film. I will go see this movie. They will have my ticket money to see Batman versus Superman. There's no doubt about that. But I'm still nervous about what this movie's going to be. And we're getting really close to it now.
Yeah.
Chicago is celebrating an anniversary this year. It is the 30th anniversary of the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
And if you go to ferrisfest.com, you can sign up and get tickets from May 20th to May 22nd for all the festivities that will be going on in the Chicago area.
Nice. The John Hughes era is a great bunch of films, and this is one of them, and they're all based around Chicago, and Chicago's proud of being a part of these movies, so here's a festival.
Well, life moves pretty fast, Steve. So what we have is you can watch the movie on May 21st at the John and Nancy Hughes Theater, mm-hmm. located in Lake Forest, Illinois.
Oh, it's not in Shermer?
There is no Shermer in Illinois,
there ain't
right?
No Shermer in Illinois.
Well, there'll be a question and answer with many of the actors. Typically, we won't get the bigger actors, but we'll get most of the character actors in there. Many of the character actors in there. You can. There'll be a recreation of the Twist and Shout Parade.
Oh, boy.
There's going to be a bus tour. You're going to go visit Cameron's house. By the way, it was up for sale, I think, last year or the year before. So you could go live in Cameron's house if you wanted to. Glenbrook North High School. The Art Institute, so you can walk through with all the kids. Uh-huh. Dearborn Street for the parade and the Willis Tower. Mm-hmm. Sears Tower, excuse
Sears
me.
Tower, that's
the
Sears
I mean,
Tower.
I meant to say that. Lake Michigan and also the Northbrook Water Tower and Wrigley Field to see the sign that says Save Ferris.
Nice. It sounds like fun. I'm not sure that I'm on board with this, but it sounds like a fun day.
Hey, somebody's going to have some fun doing this.
Festivals are great, and getting out and seeing something that you couldn't see before, because you live near Chicago, we have so many things available to us. This is one of them.
Well, and I should mention, they're going to stop at a few of the 16 Candles and also Breakfast Club sites, too.
There you go.
So, look, you get a little. It's a little bonus there. It's going to be an all John Hughes weekend.
That sounds like fun, actually. The more I think about it, the more I would actually go and do that.
We're going to have a John Hughes festival of our own one of these shows. So here we go.
Oh, yeah. We will definitely do a John Hughes episode one of these days. Chicago Public Schools will begin requiring one computer science class for high school graduation next year.
And this is different than going and learning about Word and you know, Microsoft Office stuff.
Right.
We're talking about a coding class, right?
Right. Computer training is one thing. That's what I teach at the middle school level, is how to use a computer. This is computer science. This is how computers work. And this is something that I really think a lot of people could use the logic that I teach when I teach programming mm-hmm. to apply to everything. The more logic a person has, the more they can...
They can make be logical.
Something. They can make something instead of just being a consumer of information.
This is very interesting. This is interesting across the board.
Not everyone is destined to be a computer programmer. There's Correct. No doubt about that. But what we teach in computer programming is that logic, using your mind to see the possibilities of what could happen, what will happen, and what should happen.
Do you think this is going to be a logic course? Do you think ultimately that's where it's going to come from?
Yes, I think that's exactly what we're talking about here.
I'm all for logic because that it is consistent. You create consistency.
That's right. Just like the red light camera system in Chicago, a judge has said that red light and speed cam tickets are not exactly legal. They violate due process.
And that's a wonderful thing for us. Many of the villages and cities and around Chicago have stopped this mm-hmm. because of this. I can understand why. Because if you're going to have a police officer there stopping people, mm-hmm. that's one, they saw them, and you can go to court, and you can defend yourself. With this, they basically send you a YouTube video and say, hey, this is your car moving when it should have stopped,
mm-hmm.
and here's your ticket.
Yeah, there's so many people against these red light cameras and speed cameras. The idea
I'm one of them.
Public safety, the reason why they said they were going to put in these systems was for public safety, and all of the studies have so far shown that they do not create public safety.
Well, they are sold to the community as a revenue stream.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all these people. Look at all this revenue that we can get from it, and you can passively do it. We'll send out this. We'll bring it back to you.
Make the robot do it.
Yeah. I'm glad.
I think that we are seeing the end of that in very slow increments, but there's a lot of money there.
There is, and if you are in Chicago proper, as most communities, you're looking for revenue sources. Mm-hmm.
Mobile World Congress is over for 2016, and there was lots of new gadgets headed our way in the future, lots of new phones, and a lot of conversation about how advertising is going to affect us in the future, and the concept of ad blocking. Do you run an ad blocker on your laptop?
I do. In fact, when I go to Forbes.com now, it basically says, hey, you got an ad blocker. You can't come see us.
That's right. I don't.
You don't?
I don't run any ad blockers.
So when you go someplace,
I get
ads...
lots of ads, yeah. Right. And I ignore them without paying. It's okay. I can ignore ads pretty easily. But what they were talking about at Mobile World Congress, and this was a big fight, was that we are going to be seeing more advertisement. And as we see those, maybe they're video, maybe they're pictures, we are paying for that data to come into our systems. And if we have a mobile device where we're limited to the amount of data and it's very expensive, we might be paying 5-15% in just getting those ads.
So if you had 100 units of something dropping down, 5-15 parts of that could be ads.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, why are you paying that? And eventually, the groups are shouting at each other, right?
And the question is whether we have the right to block that, whether advertising is free speech, and whether we have the right as an end user to block that advertisement.
The right as free speech. That's an interesting statement. I don't know if they have the right to push that on you.
And that's the question.
And because of that, especially if you're paying for it,
mm-hmm.
it's like your home telephone number. My only people calling my home telephone number are people soliciting for something.
And you pay for that.
And why am I paying for that? Mm-hmm. I mean, you could pay for my phone, and the byproduct of that was I get to use the phone if you can advertise to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the other way around seems kind of screwy.
I agree.
Well, anyway, this is going to be interesting. They're going to continue to fight about this. For a while, because they're looking for revenue sources
mm-hmm.
and using your information to provide that, but maybe they eventually start paying you to receive that.
We'll see. In the future, Visa will tell you when it's time to fill up your car, and very interesting whether or not it will tell you where to go to get that gas.
Well, yeah. if Visa is setting it up, does Chase or Bank of America or Citibank give you discounts for going to Shell versus BP versus Mobil or any Exxon, whatever you're going to go to? This is very interesting. It sounds like that you would pull your car into the gas station. It would authorize the payment for it. So as you're waiting for it, all you do is you pull up and you fill up with fuel, and that's it. Making it, I guess, easier.
Yeah, the payment structures that we have that are being developed right now, digital payments, are wonderful. I'm currently using Samsung Pay because I got a new Samsung phone, but the Apple Pay works great.
Sure.
The idea of having your car emanate that digital number to the gas pump, and then the gas pump goes, oh, there's your car, here's your money, here's your gas, done and done, sounds great to me. But then we have to talk about Visa and all those banks and who is going to be receiving that funding.
All right, so my light bulb just went off, and I didn't prepare this, but I'm thinking about this. Steve, one of the things about electric cars is that they're suggesting that you're not paying as much in fuel tax. So when driving down a street, if they could charge you for driving down that street,
they would.
It seems like that this is being billed as a way to go to the gas station and pay.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like it's another way to drive down the street and actually pay good to go down that street.
Mm-hmm.
And the light bulb's gone off. This article certainly doesn't mention that. But it seems like if your car becomes the Samsung Pay, Apple Pay, Google Pay, whatever you want to say,
A couple of sensors on that road make it a toll road.
Make everything a toll road if there's a sensor.
There you go. There's your revenue stream. We can get rid of the red light cameras. We've solved it already.
I'm not the brightest guy, but somehow I figured that out.
That one, that's very good. Well done, Chip. Google is looking at other fiber optic networks. You know, we've talked about Google Fiber before and how they are laying fiber optic networks and creating wonderful high-speed internet in some cities around the country.
Kansas City may have been the first. Mm-hmm. Austin, Texas. I know Raleigh's getting ready to have that. This is different, though.
Yeah, this is San Francisco, and what they're looking at here is the fiber that's already been laid and Google coming in being the ISP, providing the internet through those lanes that have already been created.
So instead of Google coming in and kind of creating this network of this super fast, they're saying, all right, San Francisco's got a lot of this stuff already laid down. What if we took their patchwork, linked it together, and we tried to provide this to all the people in that area?
Unification might be better for the service. It might be really great for Google and the people.
It could speed it up, too. Speed up the adoption of it. Because we all, fast internet is good for everyone.
That's right.
How interesting. Good for Google. Good for us.
Yeah, especially for us. Because we have fiber lines that are 3 miles away, but they're not here yet. And any innovation that we can get to get faster internet, I'm all for it.
I'm with you.
Google unveils their neural network. Oh boy, here we go.
This is the crazy part.
There we go.
The deal is they can take a picture and they can tell you where that picture is. Any picture. So let's just say I'm looking at a picture of the Eiffel Tower. Where would I be? It could be anywhere, right?
Right. Las Vegas.
Exactly. Well, we're actually talking about any type of picture.
Any picture taken anywhere, and based on the pixels of that picture, this neural network can determine the location of where that photo was taken.
And it always comes down to Walmart. It's always available at Walmart.
Wow.
That is nuts, by the way.
There are some scary things in technology, aren't there?
There are. The Benny could be, oh, I'd like to go to that, or I'd like to have whatever this picture is.
Amazon certainly wants to have an app that if you take a picture of something anywhere in the world, you can find it on their Amazon store.
Sure. Obviously, you will not be able to go to Hawaii and no one know it. You're there, right?
Virtual reality. I can go to Hawaii whenever I want. It's lovely.
This is interesting. Computers still amaze me. What amazing things.
It's magic. And that's one of the things that I say to my students when I'm teaching them about how to use computers is you need to understand what's happening here, but you might not understand as much as you need to be safe with this technology.
Oh, it's interesting. What if you wanted to write something, Steve?
Okay, funny story. I opened up Google Drive with my students on Wednesday for the first time with a group of students, and I said, look at all these tools that Google Drive has. And I clicked through all the tools, and I found there's a new tool. It dropped on Wednesday, and it is a dictation tool where you can simply speak into your computer and using Google Voice Dictation, which is, as we've talked about many times, pretty good, pretty accurate. You can write your novel without ever typing.
All right, so this is for your word processor, and you are, instead of typing in your paper, think about what word processing did to change how we write. So in the old days, you have a yellow page, you know, paper out, and you had your pen and pencil, you'd write and you'd rewrite your stuff. With word processing, you kind of put everything on a piece of paper, then you work to reorganize it through the word processor. You rewrote it through it. You changed sentences. You added stuff to it.
Revolutionized how we write. Absolutely.
And this is on an even better level.
This really is going to change the way that I teach computers, because a lot of what we've been talking about at the middle school level is keyboarding and how to type really fast. And this is eliminating that and changing it to, how do we edit words? How do we make sentences and paragraphs? How do we write?
And in fact, there you go, right there. What you may have to do is talk without stuttering.
That's welcome to podcasting.
Exactly. But it really could change. You can put everything in the world. Your thoughts that you cannot truly organize, you're kind of just throwing up on the page. And at that point, later on, coming back and rewriting
that. A totally different skill set. An absolutely different way of putting together words. We do a podcast because the voice works better for us than writing paragraph after paragraph in a blog. This is, the next generation is going to be using this skills like these, different from what we were doing in the past.
The future is here.
The future is here, and now I have to teach kids how to do it. Good for me. Changing my job once again. At least I'll know how to get to work. I use Waze. We've talked about Waze on this show 3 or 4 times. It's one of my favorite apps. I use it every single day for every single drive. It's W-A-Z-E for those of you who haven't paid attention. Waze is my personal GPS on my phone, and now I can get the voice of God himself.
Easy reader.
Morgan Freeman recorded his own voice giving directions on Waze.
Steve, take a left here.
and I would just be smiling and going, yes, sir. Whatever you say. I'm trying to get you to the store.
Get busy living or get busy dying.
This is great. Waze does this about once a month. They come out with a different voice that you can add for a limited time. This is only going to be available for a limited time. They had Ed Helms do one. They had Anthony Daniels do one. And now Morgan Freeman.
Oh, that's going to be so awesome.
It's going to be so mellow. I'm going to be falling asleep. I need the self-driving car, and I want the self-driving car to sound like Morgan Freeman.
There you go.
Kit, where are you? I'm right over here.
He'll be the voice of Siri right there.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Cortana? Nah, Morgan Freeman. Okay. I'd listen to that. I don't know, Chip. I think we got enough information to survive another week.
If we can come back next week.
I think we can. It's going to be my busy week with the musical, so I'll sound a lot more tired next week. So get ready for that, folks. If you need more information, you can find it on our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. You can give us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. Send us a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Stitcher and TuneIn and iTunes. Don't forget Spreaker. We haven't talked about Spreaker in a while. That's your favorite. Every day of the week, you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. Find out all the stuff that's happening all over the planet, not just between the FBI and Apple.
How wonderful.
Thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflug.
We'll see you in the future.